ComicBookBookBook.com.
Hello, what's good, everybody? Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, October 20th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for this Thursday show. Unfortunately, Sports Cheetah unable to join us here today. Had a family thing that he needs to take care of. But we're going to go with Tony George of TonyGeorgeSports.com for our picks and predictions segment. And then we'll also be joined by a pinch hitter today. That'll be Alex Nicholas from the SB Nation Minor Rush blog, the home of the UTEP Miners. So we'll get some Conference USA analysis here on today's show. We talked a little bit about conference specialization with Brian Leonard last week because he's an expert in the MAC. And I think that, you know, even though we don't have Cheetah on the show here today, it'll be a good chance for us to take a deep dive into a conference where there's probably going to be some value here, because with Conference USA, a lot of inconsistent teams, there are some talent gaps there. There are a lot of intriguing travel spots within the conference. So all of that stuff could add up to a pretty good weekend in Conference USA. So I think it is a decent time to get Alex here on the show. Of course, coming up on Friday, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment, myself and Cole Ryan, our Bang the Book podcast entry. Not off to the best of starts. We're only 12-18 on the season. Did start 7-3, so we know that it's in there somewhere, but unfortunately it hasn't really come to the forefront here over the last couple of weeks. But then we'll also get the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. Always good to hear where the sharp action is in both the college football and the NFL markets for this weekend. As I talked about on yesterday's show, and I'll mention it here again today, make sure that you head on over to bangthebook.com because we've got so much going on over there. A lot of great stuff for our Bang the Book Radio listeners to take advantage of. All kinds of preview content. I've got NBA season win total previews. Kyle Hunter's college basketball top 25 has been going up here as we approach that season, which begins, I believe, the second week of November. I think November 11th is actually the first day of college basketball season. So you can check out those previews, get Kyle's thoughts, see what he's thinking for some teams that have some national championship futures value, and then also, you know, how some of those teams may fare early on in the season here. I got NASCAR previews going up over there, NHL game previews every day, sportsbook reviews. If you head on over to Bet DSI Sportsbook, you can take advantage of the Bang10 promo code, give you a $10 free bet just for signing up, and also a 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. And if you want to learn more about DSI, we've got a sportsbook review for them. We also have all the other main books in the industry, Bookmaker, BetOnline, Five Dimes, Bovada, The Greek, all the different types of books that are out there. Galaxy Sports is another one. So make sure you head on over to bangthebook.com, take advantage of all of that. So without further ado, we'll share the floor with our first guest. That is Tony George of TonyGeorgeSports.com. Tony, how's it going today, man?
Doing good. Fired up and ready for a big weekend in college and pro football, and gearing up for the NBA here next week. So lots of stuff going on here, and ready to rock on the Bang the Book Radio show today.
Well, before we get into the football stuff, you brought up NBA. That does begin here next week. Is it a similar approach to you like it is for the NFL and college, where you do power ratings and then you'll start to see how things line up with the numbers?
Yeah, and one thing about the NBA, much like Major League Baseball, I have a conservative approach. I don't come out of the gate firing. I usually wait about a week and a half, possibly even 2 weeks before I even put out selections. Much like Major League Baseball, there's a lot of free agent moves, so it's the same faces in different places type scenario, I call it. And I like to see these teams, although they're – I'm looking at the scores and the box scores, you know, and in the preseason, you know, exhibition games, which, you know, you can't put a lot of, you don't put any stock into that, not a whole lot of stock into that. Much like the NFL preseason, what you see in the preseason, you know, is not necessarily carries over even into the first week of the NFL. And usually that doesn't carry over to the first week or two of the NBA. You want these teams to, you know, gel, create some chemistry, get some flow, you know, get some numbers to work off of, those sort of things, and, you know, calculate those numbers and take a look at, you know, points for, points against, rebounds, the whole nine yards, shooting percentage. And, you know, then you can get a little better handle on a power rating that's not based on something that you had figured up at the end of last year. So that's how I approach the NBA. It'll be a real slow, conservative approach here for about the first 2 weeks. And then we'll take a look at that and go from there. And one thing about the NBA, unlike almost any other sport out there, there are huge line swings in the NBA on a day-to-day basis. So when a game opens up, you know, -4, total of 201, you know, on a Wednesday night, they're not playing until Thursday night, you know, and come around Thursday night, that team could be laying 6.5, 7, you know, and the total's up to 204.5. So one word of advice, when you are following a handicapper that's good in the NBA and he puts plays out and they're up there first thing in the morning, don't wait on them. You get on them and you bet the best line, because these line swings, you know, you're betting into numbers. You're not betting into games. That's one thing that the NBA, you know, totals play swings at them, you know, on any given day can swing 3 or 4 points, you know, in an 8-hour period. So one thing, when the capper, myself included, has selections out, you know, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning Central Time, if you're going to get serious about winning, you want to get those bought and get on the game. Same thing if you're picking them on your own. You like a line, you jump on it then, and because those lines swing in the NBA, and they especially, you know, in the first couple, 3 weeks when Vegas doesn't quite have a handle on it, you know, a set specific amount of power ratings, and they will adjust the line dramatically based on action coming in. So you'll see a lot of bigger swings, especially early in the season.
We've been kind of crowdsourcing opinions, and I had a listener question a couple of weeks ago about the process of setting power ratings. And I know it was the middle of the football season, so it was maybe a little bit late of a discussion, but something that the listener and other listeners can do for 2017. And the approach that I like to take for football is I sort of grade the position groups on about a 4x10 or about 5 to 15 point scale, depending on which position group we're talking about. And then I can get power ratings from that. How do you do it for the NBA? Do you look by position group as well? Do you look at it more statistically? How do you do that?
I statistically, yes. And the position group I look at more so than anything else to put emphasis on is guard play. And guard play is going to win you games. Guard play is everything to me, especially in college basketball, you know, even more so. There's more emphasis on college than there is the NBA, you know. So it's a combination of both.
Yeah, guard play definitely very important. And, of course, when college basketball rolls around, you do a lot of stuff with the Big 12 and also the Missouri Valley. So I'm sure that we'll discuss those here in the coming weeks as we head into the month of November. But we'll get to the football side of things here for now. I had a chat with Brad Powers on Tuesday, and he was talking about how he thinks that this is one of the tightest weeks so far in college football for the Lions. Is that the way that you're seeing it as well?
Yeah, they're pretty tight. You know, there's some opportunity, and a lot of that is also you want to be careful of. There's a lot of schools with big games on deck. You know, it's that time of year where, you know, and I just did an article on my website about the polls and not to read into the polls and teams in the polls that are warranting big numbers now. And Nebraska, for instance, which is my alma mater, you know, I'm a huge Husker fan. You know, both my children were born in Lincoln, Nebraska. Both of them had a Husker stocking cap on in the nursery 20 minutes out of coming out of the birth canal. You're born a Husker up there. And I'm a huge fan, but I'm also a realist. And here you have Nebraska, who's undefeated. They're laying 24 points this week. It looks like a layup. They're playing Purdue, you know, who, by the way, gave Iowa all they wanted and then some last week. And that loss cost their head coach's job. But, you know, that's a false favorite. I mean, Nebraska should be favored. Should they be favored 24? Possibly. But at the end of the day, you take a look at Nebraska. They've got a trip to Madison, Wisconsin next week. The following week, they've got a trip to Columbus, Ohio. So, you know, Nebraska being, they'll be 7-0 at the end of this weekend. And they'll be a top, probably 7th rank. They'll probably move up another spot if anybody drops in front of them. which is likely, and it's going to look like, you know, a tight line. So I'm interested to see what that line in Wisconsin is going to be next week against Nebraska, who has not had very good luck up there. But, you know, some of these lines here, you got to look at the scheduling spots, and the lines are tight. There's also some public perception in some of these lines, and it is a tough week. I found four or five games out of the entire schedule that are worth betting this week. I'm starting to put them up. I do a weekly hidden gem, which is a small conference under the radar bet, which, you know, I don't care if I'm betting. Last week I had a big play on Eastern Michigan playing there at Ohio U, and they were catching seven. They won outright, you know, so I look for the smaller conference schools where the lines are a little bit softer. The money's just as green. I know it's not, you know, like a Ohio State Michigan marquee game or whatever, but at the end of the day, I'm finding a little value, you know, in the MAC, the Mountain West, so some of these smaller conferences that are Conference USA, they're a little bit under the radar screen, and you might want to search in those areas because the lines are pretty tight with these big, the Power Five conferences.
In terms of that Purdue-Nebraska game, I don't know if you've got it in front of you, but do you know what your true power ratings number is for that game?
Well, what I was saying on the – yeah, I do. And it's 19, and the line's 24. Now, Nebraska, for instance, you know, I did this article, and I encourage everybody to go over and read that, because the difference between power ratings and poll ratings, it's night and day. I have Nebraska ranked 22nd in my power ratings. They're ranked 8th in the polls. You know, and I've got four or five two-loss teams in front of Nebraska. I have Western Michigan, who's undefeated, in front of Nebraska. A one-loss team in Louisville. If Nebraska played Louisville in Lincoln, they'd lose by 14. In Louisville, they'd lose by more than that. You know, so it's, you know, you've got to be very careful about, you know, the power ratings and you know, versus the polls. And the polls are fodder for, you know, John Q. Public to look at, and power ratings are a totally different thing. So, yes, I've got Nebraska, a power rating there where they're 19 points. That includes a two-point home field advantage. And you never know about these teams that lose a coach. Oh, they're back on their heels. Pardon me, I'm nursing a head cold here. They're back on their heels. They lost their coach. The whole season's a mess. Remember when LSU fired Les Miles? They turned around. Missouri comes into town. New head coach. Upheaval in the program. LSU blew Missouri completely out of the stadium, you know, with a new head coach 6 days later. So don't put a lot of stock into that head coach change. A lot of times that adds fuel to the fire, fuel to the program, a little bit of adrenaline. So, you know, be careful with spots like that.
See, and what I was kind of getting at with asking about your true power ratings number is, you know, right off the top, you mentioned that there are teams in some of these tough situational spots where they do play, you know, more quality opponents. And I know that you like to talk, one of the expressions or phrases you like to use is your overlay against the Vegas line. So I was wondering if that was, you know, a pure power ratings play or if it was more of a situational play, because it can be hard to quantify those situational plays and adjust your numbers, you know, from your power ratings.
Well, the thing of it is I have a set value of numbers, and I bounce these off a buddy of mine out in Las Vegas. He's on my radio show every week. It's no secret. Matt Holt, he runs CG Technology. He's their analytics division manager. It's what he does. They set power ratings. They go solely off power ratings. You know, when they open up their lines, and then they adjust accordingly based on action. But at the end of the day, you know, what I do is I compare all the games and have a true point spread based on power ratings between these games. And then I take them and I weigh those up against what the line is. Now, anything over a 4-point overlay is worth a take, you know. So Nebraska is laying 24. Power rating in the game between the two teams is 19. That's a 5-point overlay. So I circle that game. And then after I circle the games with the overlays that bear the most difference between the Las Vegas line and what the true number should be, then I take a look at the situation. So you take and say, well, that's an automatic take. We're taking Purdue plus the number because it's a 5-point overlay. That's a huge overlay. against the spread. But then you have to look at the situation involved there. Number one is Purdue lost their head coach. Number two is Nebraska has a huge game on deck next week, and they're off a very tough game last week against Indiana where they covered the spread, but that game was in doubt until the final minute. You know, so then you have a situation there where, boy, there's a lot of intangibles involved, even though there's a big overlay against the spread. I'm going to pass on that and find something that doesn't have that many intangibles that the odds are better at winning.
Well, another game in the Big Ten here that we can touch on a little bit is Wisconsin and Iowa. And, of course, Wisconsin, a devastating loss for them against Ohio State last week. They played about as well as they possibly could in that game. They just weren't able to make enough stops there at the end. They take on an Iowa team that a lot of people were kind of down on coming into the year because this was a team that was overrated last year. They had a very, very soft schedule. And then this year they come out, and in the third game of the season, they lose to North Dakota State at home. They've also lost at home to Northwestern here. So I think that this is a really interesting game for a lot of different reasons, particularly the fact that Wisconsin is road chalk in this spot.
Yeah, you know, Wisconsin, if they had any semblance of offense whatsoever, they could be a top-ranked team in the country, one of the top-ranked teams. Their defense is unbelievable. They played Ohio State, which in my opinion is one of the top teams in the country. I didn't think I'd be saying that this far into the season. They've been impressive. They only had six returning starters. They're like Alabama. They just reload, but they lose everything to graduation, and they're, you know, just beat the hell out of everybody. They're well coached. But Wisconsin, you know, they played Michigan at Michigan, lost 14-7. If they'd had any offense in that game, they could have beat them. Same thing last week. They couldn't get it done. You know, and I had Wisconsin in that game. They were getting double digits at home, and I thought defensively they would be strong. You know, the thing that concerns you about in this game here, I think even though Wisconsin's got those losses, they're still one of the top 15 teams in the country, even without, you know, a prolific offense. What's scary about Iowa is you take a look at, you know, North Dakota State losing at home is not like Appalachian State going in and beating Michigan, you know, when Lloyd Carr was there and it was a massive upset. North Dakota State's a very good football team. They're national champions and they're in the FCS and all that. They're a good football team. That's not a total shock. But what is shocking to me is the fact that Purdue, who's absolutely terrible, Hawkeyes gave up 458 yards passing and 5 TD passes through the air, which tells me that if their defense is that bad, and it is, that Wisconsin can actually take a weak offense and put up some points here and put that shutdown defense to work. I think this is an absolute no-brainer. Iowa, who's always tough in Iowa City, bottom line is, they're 1-6, their last seven against the spread at home, either catching or laying. I'm picking Wisconsin here. I think they bounce back. I think they're a resilient bunch of kids. They got a good football team. They're well coached. And Iowa's just a little bit of a tailspin here, and almost losing to Purdue at home is almost unforgivable. Giving up that many points, I think you'll see Wisconsin put up some points here. The line is cheap. It's under 3. I'm only looking at the Badgers here. I can't make a case for Iowa.
We'll move away from the Big Ten here. Go to the SEC West. This game between Ole Miss and LSU, a little bit later than primetime, although I guess 9 o'clock is still primetime. LSU, 6.5-point favorite here in this spot. You already talked about the coaching change. Ed Orgeron seems to have this team going in the right direction. Now, he was a player's coach. You know, he had the interim role there at USC. Seemed like a lot of players were upset when he didn't get the job, and then he wound up leaving the program. But this is a really unique game for a lot of reasons. Leonard Fournette hopefully going to play here. But this Ole Miss team, it's so hard because they're so inconsistent.
Yeah, you know, they're the only team in the country that gave Alabama a really good football game this year. You know, 5-point loss there. They lost last week at Arkansas. You know, Arkansas going down to Fayetteville is always a tough place to go play. They got a good quarterback, obviously, in Kelly. The thing that scares you about Ole Miss here is they have the worst rush defense in the SEC, and Fournette's coming back. This really is LSU's first big test, in my opinion, since Wisconsin. It's obviously their new head coach's first big test. You know, it's a lot of points in this ball game. I think there's going to be some points scored. I'm not willing to lay 6.5 points with LSU. Even, tell you what, playing down in Baton Rouge at night in there, that is just absolute Death Valley. That's doomed. And I've been to a game down there at night a couple, 3 years ago, and they played Alabama. That place is an absolute snake pit to go play in. But at the end of the day, you know, Ole Miss is battle-tested. LSU, this is kind of a benchmark game for them this week. I was really surprised that they were able to hold Southern Miss to 10 points last week. And, of course, they pounded Missouri in there. This is a third straight road home game for them. Subsequently, Mississippi's going on back-to-back roadies here, which makes that a little bit scary. LSU's defense, 312 yards per game allowed, and you got Mississippi at 446 yards. I think Mississippi's played a tougher schedule, which so those numbers might be skewed a little bit. But at the end of the day here, if I had to take a side in this game, I'd be looking at taking the points with Ole Miss, with Kelly at quarterback. You know, he didn't have a great week. He hasn't had, you know, a tremendous week last week. But I think he bounces back, and I think they keep this one tight. It's probably one of the better games of the day in college football. It's going to be an exciting game. It's a national TV game. And I expect a little bit of a shootout here. And I think Fournette will have a huge day on the ground. But I think Mississippi can keep pace with throwing the football here. And I'm going to go ahead and take the points with Ole Miss.
What do you make of the line move on this game? Where it opened 4 at Bookmaker with LSU favored. Now it's up to 6, 6.5. We're not talking about really significant numbers here necessarily. But it does seem like a position has been established by the people that move lines.
Well, yeah, you know, I talked to my buddy out in Vegas about this, and they just had a ton of sharp money come in early, you know, under the fall number of 6. You know, and now what you're going to see now is you're seeing some buyback from the sharps. You know, once it got over 6, 6.5, it's spread around at 6, 6.5. It's kind of going back and forth depending on the book. If you're looking at offshore odds, Vegas odds. But at the end of the day, sharp action early, there was value. There probably was some value there at 4, 4.5. But when you get over that, you know, almost a touchdown, you know, you're going to get some buyback from the sharps going the other way based on the number. And that's why you've seen the line move up, sharp action early. And now it's going to stay steady at 6, 6.5 here. Depending on what the public does to it on Saturday, it's all going to depend because there's going to be mid-afternoon to late-afternoon money bet on the late games. That's the marquee game, so John Q. Public's going to want to be on it. And they're going to be a lot more willing to lay it than they are to take it. That's just how the public reacts. They love favorites, especially in the SEC at night type scenario. And so I think you'll see that number pretty much stay where it's at, but that's why it moves so much.
Would you happen to have an exclusive free pick in mind for our radio show listeners here in college football this weekend?
Well, I've been looking at these lines here this week, and I tell you, it's a little bit scary. However, tonight, you know, I do like Miami to keep it close against Virginia Tech.
Miami a 6-point dog here tonight against Virginia Tech. Big ACC game in that one. I think this is a really good segue over to the NFL side. We had a listener question from Doug, and he was wondering, you know, we refer to lines as being sharp lines, and he wanted to know what that refers to. Does it mean sharp relative to the power ratings of cappers? Does it mean sharp, you know, relative to the sport? So when you hear sharp lines, what does it make you think?
Well, you know, a lot of times you see a lot of lines this week, you know, sitting on fall numbers. Kansas City, 6.5, 7. You know, you got a pick 'em ball game between Washington and Detroit. You've got a lot of threes, a lot of 7.5s. You know, you got Buffalo, Miami sitting at 3. You got some totals sitting on 42 or 44. So they're landing on, you know, around fall numbers, and those are sharp lines that they're going to. That's what that means.
Well, we got a couple of those to talk about here during this segment. Seattle and Arizona, not necessarily the sharpest of lines. We'll go ahead and go with the Sunday night football game here first. But it's sitting there at 2, and I think that that's a really unique line because a Sunday night football spot in Arizona going to be one of the few true three-point home field advantages. So if you're looking at this game and trying to power rate these two teams based off of the line, Seattle would be a neutral site favorite in this game.
Yeah. You know, I give Arizona 2 points for a home field. There's some teams I give 3 points to, you know, New England, Pittsburgh, a couple of them, Minnesota right now, the way they've been playing, who's also sitting at 2.5, you know, almost at a 3 here. But, you know, Seattle continues to impress. I'm not overly jazzed about Arizona's win over what I figure a team that has no quarterback, you know, in the Jets. So, you know, what you last saw on Monday night, you know, is you would think, well, you know, Arizona's back, this, that, and the other. Arizona's played kind of a weak schedule this year. You know, it's a good matchup here. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't know what the Cardinals are doing laying numbers to one of the top three or four teams in the NFL right now. You know, Arizona's done nothing but disappoint, you know, in spots they shouldn't have disappointed in. You know, you take a look, you know, beating Atlanta, who's real, you know, last week was pretty impressive. It was a late game surge there. You know, Seattle lost to a good LA team, you know, in a low scoring battle here. Neither one of these teams have done much to impress anybody. The most impressive win that Arizona's had, you know, probably was, you know, last week when their back was against the wall, you know, giving up 21 points to Blaine Gabbert at San Francisco concerns me. You know, they lost to the Rams, you know, Arizona lost to some quarterbacks at Case Keenum, you know, Fitzpatrick, Gabbert, you know, they got crushed at Buffalo. You know, they got beat by New England by a second-string quarterback that everybody thought they were going to, you know, open up the season when Brady was first out here. I think you got a false favorite in this game. Seattle is the better team. Defensively, they're starting to gel. They did give up a lot of points to Atlanta last week at home, but they had a couple more than Atlanta did and got on the win here. And the only way I'm going to look in this game here, Carson Palmer's been inconsistent. David Johnson is an absolute stud running the football. But the one thing that Seattle's been able to do here, they had a makeshift offensive line. And each week that offensive line has gotten better. And Wilson now a little bit more healthier. His knee and ankle seem to be a lot better. He's a lot more mobile. He's not quite 100% yet running around here. But last time they faced a mobile quarterback that can move around and buy time, well, that was Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo, and they got pounded. So I'm going to take Seattle on this late game here, plus the 2.
Well, we'll backtrack then to the New Orleans-Kansas City game. I think this is one of the more intriguing games of the weekend. It's one of the bigger spreads, but I still think that there's a lot to try to decipher about this game because for Kansas City, for as good as their secondary is, this offense has not been very good this year. We talked about how they had 8 turnovers against the Jets. They only turned it into 24 points. Seems like they may have to score a little bit here this week against New Orleans.
Well, and remember, the thing about it, we took Kansas City was my big play last week against Oakland. I liked them off the bye week. You know, and Andy Reid always is good off a bye week. Kansas City, you know, 10-3 against the spread out in Oakland the last 13 trips out there. That's one of the most bitter rivalries in the NFL. It goes back to the AFL days. You know, and I live here in Kansas City, so I understand the importance of that Oakland game, you know. But at the end of the day here, I do not like Kansas City laying this many points. This is going to be a super contest pick of mine out in Vegas. I'm taking New Orleans here. And bear in mind, remember, when the Jets came into Kansas City, I went to that game. I was there in person. They gave Kansas City 8 turnovers. 6 interceptions by Fitzpatrick. Actually, the 24 points, 14 of those points was scored by their defense. Kansas City, an NFL team in their own house, got 8 turnovers, 6 of them which their offense touched. The other 2 went for touchdowns by the defense, and they only scored 10 points off 6 turnovers that the offense didn't touch. That tells you the problems with Kansas City's offense. And if they get into a score fest here, You know, obviously, Drew Brees can – if they're playing his own defense, which they will, you know, I know Peters is a good defensive back and Barry's a good safety and cover two and all this and that and the other. Drew Brees can pick apart his own defense better than any quarterback in the NFL besides Tom Brady. He does it every single week. He's got more 400-yard games than anybody. And this is going to be a tighter ball game than people think here. Kansas City not capable of getting into a shootout with any team in the NFL. I'll tell you that right now. They're better off playing the Rams or somebody with a good defense and plugging one. Kansas City is one of those teams that is a 20-17 type ball club that wants to, you know, keep it close to the vest. Andy Reid does not like to stretch a field vertically. And if Drew Brees can get, you know, out to 14, 21 points here by mid-third quarter, and you got Alex Smith back there trying to stretch a field going on verticals, they're going to be in trouble here. The points is the only way to look in this game. I'm taking Drew Brees and the Saints here to cover that number.
Last question I'll ask you about regarding this game. With New Orleans losing Rob Ryan as a defensive coordinator, a lot of people thought that that would be an addition by subtraction type of move and that this defense would get a little bit better. So far, they haven't. Over the last 3 weeks, they've given up 45, 34, and 38 points. Have you adjusted New Orleans up in your power ratings, or have they pretty much stayed about where you had them heading into the season?
Stayed about where I had them. You know, I agree. You know, I mean, you know, and Ryan, you know, him and his brother up there in Buffalo, you know, I may be wrong about them because Rex Ryan, I thought was, you know, I've said it on your show before. You know, he's masquerading as an NFL head coach. His brother's masquerading as a defensive coordinator in the NFL. You know, he pretty much ran the Saints defense into oblivion. You know, and it takes some while to recover. And they just haven't made enough free agent moves. They don't have a good enough pass rush. You know, when you don't have a good pass rush, you know, and you got to cover receivers more than 4 or 5 seconds, they're going to get open. I don't care if you got Revis back there and whoever, bring Rodney Harrison back, whatever you got to do. But at the end of the day, you know, Sean Payton is more than content to just say, okay, much like, you know, Atlanta had been earlier this year, you go ahead and score, we'll just outscore you, you know. And last week, you know, they were putting away Carolina and, you know, they ended up, you know, winning, but you know, they're just going to outscore you. They're just going to come out and outscore you. They've succumbed to that fact. And I haven't moved them up with a couple of wins here, really. But at the end of the day, you know, if they're playing a team that's weak offensively, it's a big advantage for New Orleans. And right now, you know, they're playing a team that is weak offensively right now. Now, Jamaal Charles is getting a little healthier. You know, obviously Kansas City's good at running the football, so they're going to try and run the football here, eat clock, keep them off the field as long as they can. I'm relatively sure if you and I are sitting here talking about this and we've already figured that out, the defensive coordinator and coaches at New Orleans know that Andy Reid's going to pound the rock right at them. They're going to move up their linebackers, dare them to throw the football and try and stop the run. Might be an underplay too, because of that scenario, because that's what Kansas City is going to do. They're going to try and eat clock and just move the change. You got a total sitting there, you know, and about, last time I checked, about 50 and a half. Probably the better play in this case, probably to take the under.
A lot of good insights today from Tony George of TonyGeorgeSports.com. What's going on over there at the website in preparation for this weekend?
Well, we got some great handicappers over here, obviously. You're Buddy Brian Powers is on your show. Is we put him up on the website here. We got some guaranteed selections. My national radio show on SB Nation Radio is up there archived on Fridays before it airs on Saturday on Sirius Channel 93 and SB Nation Radio. So you can check that out. Got free play videos I do for Bang the Book that are up there. I had Kansas City on a free play video, and I ended up making it a premium play last week over there at Bang the Book. So be sure and check out the videos. And 12 to 15 free plays on Saturday and Sunday each from America's Top Cappers. Come over and check us out.
That's at T George Sports on Twitter. Tony, as always, appreciate your time. We'll talk to you again next week, man.
Okay, thank you, Adam.
A lot of good stuff there from Tony George. And as I mentioned, you know, a guy that really does excel and specialize in the Missouri Valley Conference for college basketball. I think conference specialization, something a lot of our listeners should try to take advantage of. And we're going to try to do that right now with Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. Alex, how's it going, man?
Hey, it's going great, Adam. Good to hear from you again, man.
Good to hear from you again, too. I know it's been a little while since we've had you on the show here. Good to have you back. Big weekend coming up in Conference USA. And, you know, I, as I was saying at the top of the show here today, you know, this is a really unique conference for a lot of reasons, because you do have some talent gaps, but you also have some really, really hard travel spots, because this is a conference that's really spread out. And I think we see some of that here this week.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it. You know, we've talked, I remember we would talk about this a lot during basketball season last year. And, you know, it does affect some things when you're looking at, you know, point spreads, when you're looking at over and under, when you're just looking at matchups. And, you know, it definitely is, I think, the only favorable travel matchup is the UTSA-UTEP matchup. But, you know, other than that, yeah, you have a Marshall at North Texas a couple of weeks ago, you know, even a Louisiana Tech at FIU this week. So definitely just some interesting geographic matchups that kind of, in my opinion, especially later in the season, could play into whether you're trying to get action on a certain game or not.
Well, before we look at some specific matchups here for this week, I kind of want to get an overview a little bit of Conference USA as a whole. Is there a team that really stands out to you as being significantly better than you thought they would be this season?
You know, I think actually the opposite. There's been a couple teams that I've kind of thought would rise to the occasion in terms of being maybe a two-loss or one-loss team, but it's definitely surprising to see Western Kentucky lose two straight games before that huge win last week against Middle Tennessee. You know, I figured that they could pull a game against the team that they had on the ropes with Vanderbilt early on in the year. So to see them at 4-3 is definitely surprising. And also to see Middle Tennessee at 4-2, a game last week, I thought maybe they should win. I thought this was a team that could possibly carry Conference USA's proverbial maybe torch into a New Year's Six game. But that doesn't look like it's going to happen as well. Also, Southern Miss, you know, obviously they've had kind of a tough schedule. They lost at Troy. They lost at LSU, and now they're 4-3, 2-1. But I think maybe the most surprising team is FIU as of late. Maybe not at the beginning of the season, but FIU was 1-3. They had just got hammered by UCF. And, you know, when they – Ron Cooper, that interim coach, has just infused so much energy into the team, and they're buying in with the physical running game, with a very stout but bend-don't-break defense. And to see them 3-0 after they've had a very manageable schedule in terms of not playing the kind of the big dogs, if you will, yet in the CSA East. But that's really been a team that I was high on at the beginning of the year and thought that they could surprise people with that run game and with their defense. And now you're seeing what they've been able to do over the past 3 weeks, taking care of business. Florida Atlantic here at UTEP, they dominated UTEP, and then squeaking the game out of Charlotte. That's a team that can fall definitely into that surprising mode. But I was high on them at the beginning of the season, but it's good to see them kind of regroup in the middle of the season with an intern head coach and play the way that they have. But now you get into the last five games, and they have Louisiana Tech at home, Middle Tennessee at home, at Western Kentucky, Marshall at home, and at Old Dominion. You got five teams there that can possibly represent Conference USA's bowl bids. And, I mean, that's going to be a tough slate, but definitely Florida International. At the beginning of the year, like I mentioned, I was high on them just because of the talent they had. Fell off definitely with the 1-3 mark. But now over the past three games and being able to take care of business, that's a really, really surprising team compared to where they were at a couple weeks ago, firing Ron Turner and looking like a complete dumpster fire. Now they're actually looking like a legitimate contender if they can somehow find a way to pull off what would be a major upset against Louisiana Tech this week at home.
Definitely would be a major upset. We'll talk about that game in a little bit, but the Golden Panthers are facing a huge number at home here. So we'll talk about that one in a few minutes. I guess we'll go chronologically here in terms of the Conference USA slate for this week. And we'll start with a game that's a non-conference matchup for North Texas, who goes on the road to take on Army, a much improved Army team, an Army team that was a huge surprise at the start of the season. But North Texas, in their own right, a really big surprise here as well. Seth Littrell's doing fantastic with this team. The defense has improved. The offense has improved. They currently have a winning record in conference play, 3-3 overall. But they're a 19.5-point dog here this weekend to take on that triple option attack.
Yeah, you know, North Texas has really, really been improving. The thing that kind of gets overlooked at North Texas is they're not – they don't have a full 85 scholarship count. You know, they're very short in terms of depth. So it's really good to see Seth Littrell really kind of raise up that program. Mason Fine, a guy that he stands anywhere between 5'9 and 5'11, has been a very solid addition to them. He beat out Alec Morris, the Alabama transfer, and Alec Morris has not had very impressive numbers. But I think with them is they're balanced offensively. They have one of the better running backs in the league in Jeffrey Wilson, and that's going to be kind of a key for them to get going. And I've watched Army. Army came in here and just waxed UTEP 60. They put up a 66 piece, and that is a very deep, a very talented, a very physical team in Army. Andy Davidson, that fullback, is just a tremendous guy. That triple option, when you start off with that fullback and he's able to get 4 or 5 yards a pop, that is why Army's triple option game is very, very efficient. And that is definitely one of the bigger matchups, I think, even though it is a non-conference game. But because the fact that North Texas has gone off to the surprising start and they played well, you know, you look at what they were able to do against a team like Marshall. They hung with Middle Tennessee for about 3.5 quarters, and they even gave Florida some fits on the road, and they've done it with their defense. And that's what's going to be, to me, was going to be a really, really key for them. They're on defense, their rushing success rate is just at 41.5%, which ranks 65th in the nation. That's not bad to going up against an Army team whose rushing success rate is 16th in the nation. That's obviously, you're going to give Army, you know, that advantage right there in the run game. But this is a North Texas defense that has seen veteran guys like Keyshawn McClain, Courtney Finney, their two leading tacklers, a junior and a senior. Those guys are going to really have to come up and be very, very sound in that run game. And that this is definitely one of the more interesting games, because it's going to be as simple as it sounds. It's really going to prove if North Texas this real team that I really feel that they can be a factor in the Conference USA West, not only with their balance on offense, with their defense, but with that energy that Seth Littrell has kind of infused into that program. And that's going to be a closer game than I think a 19-point favorite. Even the S&P projections have them as an 11-point dog. So yeah, I think that game could be a lot closer. But we mentioned kind of it's not a Conference USA game, but you mentioned that the road trip, North Texas having to go out east to West Point, not an easy road trip for anybody, especially when that crowd is going to be juiced up for an Army team that's really, really playing his best football in probably a decade. So that's going to be a really interesting game. Is North Texas for real? Is their balanced offense for real? And can their defense hold up against what is a very, very strong triple option with so many parts? And that's going to be a key to in the Conference USA race in terms of are they for real or not.
Well, one thing to keep in mind here, co-defensive coordinator Mike Ackler, and I apologize if I butchered his name there for North Texas, was the linebackers coach at Georgia. So he's seen the Georgia Tech triple option here over the last couple of years. So it's not like he's going in blind, although, you know, for North Texas, it's not like they see a whole lot of triple option offenses. So we'll have to see how this one plays out. But again, keep in mind here, one thing with these option teams, because they run a whole lot and a lot of them don't really run with much tempo, big numbers tend to have a little bit more value in games like that because there are fewer possessions, fewer plays, that type of thing. So we'll have to see how North Texas plays it. Not going to spend a whole lot of time on this game, 3:30 kick between Prairie View, A&M, and Rice, because we don't have a number for it. But Rice is 0-6 on the year. Do they get this victory?
I think they do. They were close. I mean, they were a missed field goal and an extra point away from beating an improved UTSA team. And you kind of see offensively they're starting to kind of get it in terms of their RPOs and being balanced and being efficient in it. And I think, yeah, I think you finally see Rice get off the schneid. I mean, this is a team that I believe has the frontline talent in terms of starters, but that depth has definitely been eaten up. But yeah, I finally think Rice can be able to squeak it out. I want to see Rice get a comfortable 2-3 score win to see just some confidence back. But yeah, I think they should definitely handle a team like Prairie View and A&M, especially at home.
Well, we've got a game that should have a significant amount of offensive plays and possessions here. Middle Tennessee State on the road against Missouri. Missouri, one of the biggest tempo jumps from last year to this year. And Middle Tennessee expected to give Missouri a game here in this one. They're a 7-point dog, although this number did open more like 5 or 6. Some places opened as low as 4. So we are seeing Missouri get the love here this week. But this is a dangerous Middle Tennessee State team.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, they're explosive as they come in terms of Conference USA offenses. You know, you look at their explosiveness, you look at their efficiency, all within the top 30 in the nation. You know, and not only that, but their quarterback, Brent Stockstill, has kind of that it factor. You know, he was able to engineer a comeback for the past couple of weeks, and that is very, very special. And you mentioned how explosive they are with guys like Richie James. And the big key for them, I think, is their running back, Itavius Mathers. When he, you know, you mentioned about limiting possessions. Yeah, as quick as an offense in NASCAR as they can roll, I've seen them being able to wear out teams with a guy like Itavius Mathers, and that could be kind of a difference when you look at what Missouri's kind of struggled with in stopping runs and limiting big plays. They're 106 in rushing S&P plus. You know, and you look on the flip side, you know, they're not running the ball as well either. But obviously, like you said, that offense is going to be a key. And I think this is a game that if Middle Tennessee can limit their mistakes, limit their turnovers, and cash in on points and getting six instead of seven, this could be a relatively, I guess you can call it an upset because it's a Conference USA over SEC team. But I think this is a Middle Tennessee State team that's going to take a lesson from dropping the game they probably felt they should have won last week against Western Kentucky, a rival, an emotional game, and take this on the road and really, really shock Missouri. I'm a big fan of Stockstill, the coach. I think he's a really, really good motivator, and I think that could kind of be a factor. You know, the S&P only has the S&P projections only have Missouri as a 4-point favorite, and I kind of like that type of a Middle Tennessee winning a game in the mid-30s. I think if it gets into a shootout, if it gets into the 40s and the 50s, I think advantage definitely goes to Missouri. But if Middle Tennessee can control the game and can limit possessions with their running game and be able to kick a 38-32 lead and get a late touchdown into a 35-32 lead and leave Missouri with less than 2 minutes, less than 3 minutes left on the clock, I like Middle Tennessee's chances. But that run game, I think, has to be on point with Itavius Mathers. That's a guy that just really been going off this year, and he's one of the more underrated running backs in Conference USA because of Middle Tennessee's pass game. But that is the key for me. Every time I see Itavius Mathers being able to move the chains, move that metal a little bit, that makes Middle Tennessee just that much better. But overall, this offense is really, really explosive, and it starts with Brent Stockstill. But that's a really, really key game, not only for Middle Tennessee to kind of keep their head above water at 5-2 if they win, but just to gain some sort of respect for Conference USA because they've lost a lot of respect against non-conference opponents this year.
The timing of this game is what really strikes me because it comes right in the middle of conference play for both teams. Middle Tennessee, as you mentioned, off of that devastating double overtime loss against Western Kentucky, they had a bye week to prepare for that game, so they should be okay from an injury standpoint for the most part. And then there's Missouri, who's gotten blown out twice in consecutive SEC road games. They lost by 35 at LSU, by 26 in Gainesville at Florida. It's just such a really unique spot to catch a game like this here, you know, in the heart of conference play. And which side do you think that favors? I mean, do you think that favors a Middle Tennessee team that, you know, can go up there with a chip on its shoulder? Or does that favor a Missouri team that now gets a little bit of a step down in class?
I think I would lean towards Missouri just because I've seen it a couple of times this year with teams that get right games. And this could be that for a team like Missouri, who after Middle Tennessee, they have a winnable game against Kentucky, a winnable game at South Carolina, a winnable game at Vanderbilt, and then very two tough games at Tennessee and Arkansas. So I think what they're looking at is this is the perfect opportunity to get right. And I would definitely lean to Missouri because they're at home. Now, going on the road against a Middle Tennessee team, if they had to go on the road against a Middle Tennessee team who should be pissed off from losing last week, that I would think Missouri would be in somewhat of a troublesome, even though Middle Tennessee isn't going to draw 50,000, but just the comfortability of being home. But I think you definitely got to slide with the team of Missouri because you look at the bigger picture. After this Middle Tennessee State game, if they can pull this one out in that emotional win, you have three winnable games to get yourself back in position to not only be in a bowl game, but to kind of get some SEC respect at Middleton, at Tennessee, and then Arkansas to finish the year, the last two games. So I think this definitely is an advantage to Missouri just because, like I said, this is kind of that almost that get-right game. And I've seen so many teams take advantage of that this year, and I think Missouri could do that. But I really, really want to lead to a Middle Tennessee upset just because of how I think they're due. I just think as many games as they've played this year where they've kind of beaten themselves, I think Middle Tennessee State is due for kind of that get-right game themselves. But I would get it, to your question, though, I think Missouri would have that advantage. So,
well, we'll go back to a Conference USA matchup, Charlotte and Marshall. This is one that Brian Leonard touched on Tuesday's show, talking about how his peer power rating said to take Charlotte about 19. He slept on it. By the time he woke up, the number had completely gotten away from him. It's been a steady stream of 49ers money in this game. They're down to a 12.5-point dog here in this one. We're starting to see some buyback now. Marshall getting back up toward 13. And look, heading into the season, Charlotte was one of the two or three worst teams in the country in terms of power ratings for handicappers. And Marshall was a team that was expected to do exactly what they've done, as they've been doing, you know, during the Doc Holliday reign there. But this Marshall team is a lot different. They got blown out multiple times in non-conference play, really ugly loss in Denton against North Texas to start off Conference USA play. And not exactly a confidence-inspiring win last week over Florida Atlantic. What is going on with the Thundering Herd?
Man, that's the biggest question. We tried to break that down last night in our podcast. To me, I think it's defensively. I think, you know, I mentioned it on a preseason podcast with you guys where they lost Tequan Lang as a big-time safety. I mean, it's tough when you lose one player. I mean, one player really doesn't make a defense, but he was that important to the defense. And I think that is where I look at, you know, I look at their defensive rating, look at their linebacker havoc rating. You know, it's really, really kind of puzzling to see, as well as Marshall recruits. And you would expect, like you said, the Doc Holliday team to just kind of reload. They did lose a lot of guys from last year, but this is just, they're just a puzzle right now. I mean, a big puzzle that it's hard to figure out. Chase Litton has had some really big games this year. And then again, the offense, you know, the offense has really kind of sputtered in terms of the run game. And this is really, really an interesting matchup because, I mean, Charlotte is improving. They found a niche with Hassan Clue at quarterback, Khalif Phillips, their running back. They found a nice little niche there with those two guys. I think last week both of them had over 90 yards rushing. And this Marshall team is just very, very tough to figure out. You know, I watched that North Texas game, and I'm just waiting for that Marshall big run or that Marshall defensive stop. And it was North Texas making those big plays. It was North Texas making a big pick six. So you just see this Marshall team just so flustered and out of sync of what we're used to in terms of having solid quarterback play, tremendous receiver play, being very stout in their front seven defensively and speedy in their back end. You're not seeing that at all. You're seeing just a team that's flustered. And I think it's interesting because, like you mentioned, at the beginning of the year, I would have thought that Marshall would be a 21-point favorite in this game, 28-point favorite. But the tide has definitely turned. Like I said, Charlotte's found a little niche offensively. And defensively, they're doing a good job over their past couple of games of holding teams that they're supposed to into the 20s and giving themselves an opportunity to win. And this Marshall team, if they come out and make the same mistakes they have, if they've been lethargic on offense and been slow starting on offense, this is going to be another game that could be a big, big upset just because of where Marshall's been and where Charlotte's been the past couple of years. So definitely Marshall's on upset mode in my mind, or upset watch in my mind.
We talked a little bit about Florida International already here, and it appears that people in the handicapping market think that the FIU, if you'll allow me the pun here, is a paper panther, not necessarily a paper tiger. But you've got a situation here where Louisiana Tech opened under 13. They opened a 12.5-point road favorite, and now they're up to a 17-point road favorite at some places. So obviously there aren't a whole lot of people in the handicapping community buying into this FIU team. Or maybe they've just looked at what Louisiana Tech has done over the last 3 weeks and said, okay, this team finally got it figured out.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You look at what the ridiculous video game type numbers that Louisiana Tech's been putting up offensively, and I think that's going to be a big difference in this game. And I, you know, as good as Florida International's been, and you know, when you say good, they beat Florida, they beat Florida Atlantic, they beat UTEP, they beat Charlotte. And, you know, they've been kind of relatively close games outside of the UTEP game. I think Louisiana Tech's a team that you can blink and they put up 28 points, especially against a team like FIU. And FIU's best bet in this game is, like I mentioned before, is being able to run with their tandem that they have at running back with Alex Gardner and Anthony Jones, who have been very, very good and surprisingly good over the past couple of weeks. But you look at a Louisiana Tech team that kind of struggled with UTEP early on a couple of weeks ago, getting their offense going, but defensively they were strong. I think you can see that same mold of Louisiana Tech maybe getting off to kind of a slow start, holding maybe a two-score lead, a 14-7, a 21-7 lead before they explode. But, you know, they are really finding it. You know, you got probably two of the best group of five receivers in Trent Taylor and Carlos Henderson, who have just kind of been trading off, having big games. Hey, look what I can do. I can do this better. And that's a very, very big key in this game because Florida International has kind of struggled in terms of allowing big plays all year long, especially in the passing game. You know, you look at what they've done recently against the teams they played, their rushing ISO triple P has definitely improved, but I think that's a product of who they played. You know, UTEP does not have an explosive passing game. Charlotte does not have an explosive passing game. Neither does FAU, and that's really improved just because of who they played. But I think Louisiana Tech is definitely a team that's almost a lock this week with that spread, just because of how well they're playing. And you know, but on the same token, though, like I mentioned, Florida International has been playing with a lot of energy. They've been playing with a lot of fight, and Ron Cooper's really infused that. And sometimes that could do well for a half or so, but against an explosive team like Louisiana Tech, that would need to be for a four-quarter type of explosion of energy of being able to stop them. But I just don't think Florida International can do that, and I think Louisiana Tech should probably cover that with some big late touchdowns. The team that had three or four big plays last week that really opened up that score against UMass, I can kind of see that same game going, but in a lower scoring 35-7, 42-7 type of game instead of them putting up 56 points that they've done over the past couple of weeks.
In today's Nobody Cares About Your Fantasy Team point, I actually stumbled upon Carlos Henderson last week because of bye weeks. 12 catches, 326 yards, 5 touchdowns. Over the last 2 weeks, 20 catches, 558 yards, 8 touchdowns. So Ryan Higgins definitely has this Louisiana Tech offense going in the right direction, and I think that's really the big reason why we're seeing the line move that we are seeing here in this spot. UTEP and UTSA, a game that probably won't get too many people excited, but 9.5-point spread here in this game for the Miners, and this number growing a little bit. Looks like it's going to wind up going to double digits. Can UTEP keep this one close, though?
I think they can keep it close for three quarters. You know, I think that line is very fair. I think it went about 7.5 or 7. And, yeah, you know, I think UTEP will keep it close for three quarters, but just the fact that they do not have a passing game and they cannot put up points is going to be the difference in this game. And UTSA's defense is really proven to be an above-average defense to possibly top of the conference. I know, you know, they lead in a couple of statistical categories, points per game, points allowed. But, yeah, I think UTEP will keep it close until the third quarter. Either their offense is going to sputter with, as they've done in the second half, with multiple three and outs. That's kind of been a trend for UTEP coming out of the half. You know, three and out, three and out, three and out, turnover. And I think UTSA, all year long, UTSA has done a good job of cashing in turnovers and cashing in those inopportunities or their opponents' inopportunities in the points. And I think that's what's going to turn a possible 14-13 game into a 27-14 UTSA win or a 34-14 UTSA win. UTEP's offense just is not there. Now, one thing to do keep in mind, though, off of bye week, you never know what you're going to get out of a team that's 1-5. Obviously, Sean Cougar is on the hot seat, so they're going to pull out a lot of stops, I believe, but I just don't think that UTEP is at that level yet to say, oh, well, they'll come out and put up points against a defense like UTSA that's proven to be stout. So I think for three quarters, and then you'll see, like I mentioned, there's going to be that offensive low for UTEP, whether it's a three and out, whether it's a turnover, and UTSA is going to do what they've done all year and just cash that in and bury you. And I think that's what we could see in the Alamo Dome Saturday night.
Is UTSA a team that over the next couple of years you'd have a close eye on as somebody that could, you know, kind of start to move up into the upper echelon of this conference?
I think so because of what they've done recruiting-wise. I mean, they've put it right now, if you look at it, they may be in the top 60 or the top 50 in the nation, and they're getting recruits here that they've really probably nobody in Conference USA has touched before. And you talk about a number of three-star guys, and what Frank Wilson is doing is really just bringing energy in, and he's firing up the fan base, and he's doing a tremendous job of recruiting, something that he did a great job with at LSU, as we all know. And I think no doubt about it, you know, they have some great coaches that have really done a tremendous job of implementing a run type of base system where they're running the football effectively with two good running backs, and they're just going to continue to recruit. It's easy to get kids to come to San Antonio, especially in that recruiting area. It's pretty much a hotbed there, Central Texas, East Texas. They have access to South Texas. I definitely think this is a team, if they continue this upward progress and they continue this strong recruiting that they've done pretty much ever since Frank Wilson took over back in January, this is definitely a team that you're going to see hang up there with the Southern Misses and the Louisiana Techs in terms of being that strong program in Conference USA.
One more game to touch on here in Conference USA, and I think this one, from a betting standpoint, based on some of the context surrounding this game, may be my favorite to talk about. Old Dominion catching 13.5 here against Western Kentucky. For Old Dominion, extra rest. They had their game against UMass moved up a day because of Hurricane Matthew. Played on a Friday night, beat UMass handily. Now they go to Bowling Green to take on Western Kentucky, who's coming off of that very big, very emotional double overtime win over Middle Tennessee. Is there a letdown factor here for the Hilltoppers?
It could be. It could be. They've played in a lot of emotionally charged, a lot of close games. I mean, you look at it, you know, they're maybe, what, 10 points away from being a 5-2 team or maybe even a 6-1 team. And, you know, Old Dominion's really flown under the radar, if you want to say, with wins against teams that they should. And this is really going to test Old Dominion. But I agree, Western Kentucky, you know, their big issue, I think, is turnovers. You know, you look at where they're at in terms of finishing drive and their turnover margin, that -5, that's very, very un-Western Kentucky-like from what we've seen over the past couple of years. And Old Dominion is going to try to thrive off that. And Old Dominion is that team that, you know, their turnover margin, they're on a +6, which ranks second in the nation. That could be a big difference in this game, especially if there's a Western Kentucky, like you mentioned, a letdown where they're beating themselves in terms of turnovers, in terms of just making mistakes offensively. I think you'll see this Old Dominion team with Bobby Wilder, who is probably the biggest master motivator in this conference, and he's done a tremendous job with this team. You know, after getting waxed by Appalachian State and NC State, he's been able to right that ship, and they've played very good football both sides of the ball. They have two really good running backs. One of the most exciting players, I think, in Conference USA at quarterback, David Washington, who's their third leading rusher. But, I mean, for Western Kentucky, I think it's all going to be about their defense. Can their defense hold up? That's really kind of been what's really hurt them all year long, is their defense allowing those long drives, those big plays. And so turnovers and allowing those long plays and those big drives could lead to that Western Kentucky letdown, because, like I said, they've played some emotional games. They played some up-and-down games, and now going up another one with a team like Old Dominion, this is definitely one of my favorite games in the game that I'm definitely going to watch. I think this one is just too close to call. You know, the S&P, I kind of agree with it, with Western Kentucky being a 7-point favorite in the S&P, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than that, just because Old Dominion kind of has that factor of being able to play well over the past 3 weeks, play soundly, and then Western Kentucky coming off some emotional win. Something's got to give, but I think we're in for almost a classic battle. And Old Dominion has a chip on their shoulder. Bobby Wilder is definitely probably preaching any type of bulletin board material. He's a guy that felt that his team should have been rated higher in the preseason. I think that they're out to prove that this week, especially against a team like Western Kentucky, that they can move, you know, Old Dominion into that Conference USA East race, you know, with a big win over Western Kentucky this weekend.
The last thing I'll ask you about on this game, though, and you kind of alluded to this a little bit already, is Old Dominion's beaten Hampton, UTSA, who, as we talked about, an improving team, but that game was at Old Dominion, and, of course, that's a pretty long trip there from the state of Texas. They won at Charlotte. Charlotte's not a very good team, although, again, a little bit of improvement from them. Then the win over UMass, and UMass is a very bad football team as well. So I feel like through six games, even though Old Dominion's 4-2, and as you mentioned, they've beaten the teams that they should, you know, how much do we really know about them? I mean, what is their ceiling? What is their floor? What do you think we see going forward?
And that's a big question. You look at what they've done defensively against the teams they're supposed to. You know, you hold those past three opponents under 20 points, which you're supposed to. But like you mentioned, they really, when they've stepped up in competition, you look at NC State, you look at what they did against Appalachian State, they pretty much no-showed. And I think with this team, I think the big thing is looking at the defensive side of the ball and how well they can stay up. I mean, TJ Ricks is probably one of the better linebackers in the conference. But outside of that, you just don't have any proven depth of guys that can go out there and get you back-to-back stops against a Western Kentucky team if you're down by 2 scores to get yourself back in the game. And I think that is what we're going to find out. How can a team like Old Dominion battle back if they find themselves down against Western Kentucky? Can their defense get back in the game? We've all known Old Dominion of being an efficient offense with really good runners and good athletes, and they've had, you know, one of the best receivers, you know, out there in Zach Pascal in the conference. But can their defense be able to keep them in the game against an explosive, what could be an explosive offense of Western Kentucky? We haven't seen that efficient explosiveness from Western Kentucky, but that's what I'm looking at is defensively. If Old Dominion is for real, can they hold their team from getting blown out from a 14-point lead, and can their defense get them back into the game? Or on the flip side, can their defense come out, start fast, and give their offense an opportunity to jump out on a lead on the road? And I think that will kind of tell us how their ceiling is. If that defense can respond and their defense can put Western Kentucky in some tough spots, I think their offense, the way that they run it and the way that they utilize their weapons, I think they can move the ball and put up points against Western Kentucky. But I think their ceiling is all in how well can that defense play on the road against a team that has played well at home as well on the offensive side of Western Kentucky. So I think that will tell us a lot as far as how much of a factor Old Dominion's defense is in this game.
Well, like I said at the top of the segment, I thought it was a really good time to take a deep dive here into a conference that doesn't get a whole lot of play. Conference USA, of course, here with Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush. What's going on over there at the website?
Oh, man, we got a lot of stuff going on here. We'll have our game preview for the UTSA game coming up. We had some UTSA basketball news with a couple of recruits committing over the past couple of weeks. And we also have our podcast that we did last night, talking all things UTEP, while also previewing UTSA. And I have a nice little write-up that I did on UTSA's Frank Wilson. You mentioned earlier about them kind of rising in Conference USA, and I got some quotes from him and kind of touched on that as well. So a lot of good content up there. We'll have our game preview up there. We'll have some other stuff if you're looking to get some action in on the UTSA-UTEP game. So hopefully have you covered with some solid info if you can put some cash in your pocket this weekend.
Well, Alex, really appreciate your time. Thanks a lot, man. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Adam. Have a good one.
Well, good deep dive there into Conference USA. We'll definitely try to get Alex Nicholas back as we start breaking down some college basketball stuff here next month. We can take a little bit of a look at Conference USA and college hoops with him, something that we did last year. So for our longer-term listeners, you certainly remember that. As I said at the top of the show, coming up on Friday, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment for Week 7 with myself and Cole Ryan, and then also the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. So I'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Thank you to those of you that reached out and congratulated me for the Indians going to the World Series. I really appreciated that. You haven't heard it too much in my voice, I don't think, but I'm ecstatic about that, and I'm sure you'll hear a lot of nervous energy from me next week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday's shows. But, again, that'll do it for us today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I'll talk to you again tomorrow.